Jane and Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
All good. How's things with you?
Not too bad, yeah. Ready to talk about movies.
As always, as we always do. Before we get onto that, we have had another email.
Okay.
Would you like to hear this email?
Absolutely, yeah, go for it.
Okay, so this email is from Ryan in Ashburn, all the way in the USA. I had to Google it. It's from Oregon in the USA.
Oh, wow. We're reaching quite far then.
I know, it's amazing. We've reached at least a continent. So anyway, this is Ryan's question for us. He says, "Dear Dean and Sam, really enjoying the podcast. Think it's great to hear a father and son enjoying each other's company and watching and talking about movies. But I have a question for both of you. And it's the same question. It's a test to see whether or not you give the same answer." Okay?
Okay. Interesting.
So that's Ryan's questions. Thanks very much, Ryan. We appreciate that. Question is, Sam, what is the first movie you remember watching with your dad in the cinema? And same question. So, and it's essentially the same question to me, but to see whether or not we give the same answer. Very clever. Thanks, Ryan. It's a really good question. And potentially could be the end of the podcast and our relationship, but let's see how we get on with it.
Oh, dear. What if I just guess wrong? And then it's all completely over. I don't know. I kind of want to hit what you might say, but
I think I know the answer. To be fair, my memory would be better, I would like to think.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, go on.
I'm going to go for a complete wild card and say that it was Chicken Run.
Oh, you're so close. Our memories could be different.
Chicken Walk.
That's the one. It was Chicken Walk. Now, my memory is I had won free tickets to a cinema, which I won't name, because then everybody will know roughly where we are and we don't want to be stalked. But and when I checked, it was an art house cinema. When I checked, the only thing that was available to watch that I thought you might be interested in was Wallace and Gromit. And they were showing all three Wallace and Gromit movies after the other. And you would have been 2 or 3 years old, and we went and saw Wallace and Gromit. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, because I remember, if we're not giving locations away, a certain public transport you could hear in the background. So I actually do have a memory of that, yeah.
Yeah, so we won't give the location away, but it rhymes with the Bineside Cinema. I've given it away, haven't I?
Sineside Cinema.
Sineside. And it's the Bine and Fear Petro, just for those who might be interested. Do you remember that? We went and watched Wallace and Gromit together.
I do, yeah. If only I'd said that one, because, yeah.
It was. I think it's a defining moment in your life, because you would have been 2, maybe even less. And you came away and decided that you wanted to be an animator. And I think you wanted to do that for years. So thanks, Ryan. We haven't managed to survive that particularly difficult question because you were sort of in the right ballpark.
Podcast's over.
But you were in the right ballpark. You were definitely in the Aardman thing. So there we are. So anyway, we should move on to our podcast. In our last episode, we gave a mark out of 10 memory score for tonight's film, which is the 2011 Martin Scorsese classic Hugo. And I gave it a memory score of 6. And Sam, you gave it a...
I gave it an 8 for this one, yeah.
Okay. That gives us a total Benefit of Hindsight memory score of 14. And we've been averaging those out. So overall, we gave it a 7. Now, we've done exactly the same thing for The Phantom Menace in episode 1, for King Kong in episode 2. If you haven't checked out those episodes, give it a listen and let us know your thoughts. So, as always, first question, you gave it a memory score of 8. How confident are you that you're going to stick to that score?
this is an interesting one. So with King Kong last time, you had made a point of saying that your score kind of depended on the conversation that we had.
Right.
And it's the same for me this week.
It's
very interesting, I don't want to say emotions that I went through for this one, but I went through some thoughts, let's say.
Okay, interesting. I'm just going to kick off by saying two things, which I think are fairly well known. One is that this movie was a flop at the cinema. It didn't quite lose money, but it didn't make any either. I think it sort of would have had a profit of like 3 million, which is, you know, a flop in movie terms. But it was nominated for 11 Oscars. Did you know that?
Oh wow, I didn't know that. No, interesting.
Yeah, best film, best director, and it ended up winning 5.
Wow.
So a flop of a movie, apparently, 11 Oscars, the highest nominated movie for the year. Best director, best film, and all of those things. And it won 5, but it didn't win any of the biggies. There were things like art direction and sound and special effects and things. I guess they're the biggies if you're into that. But yeah, I did not remember that at all. So we are talking about a film that was not popular with the public, but seemingly quite popular with the critics. How would you sit with that as an idea?
That's interesting, because I think, if anything, it's always been seen in the public still as a film that didn't do quite well. But then knowing that people actually did enjoy it, like I don't want to say the right people enjoyed it, because that's not really how cinema works. It's for the audience. But no, that's interesting. That I don't know if that changes my score.
I thought there was a kind of, and this is the wrong way to describe it, but there's a little bit of kind of, I don't know. I think the Academy Awards are quite, dare I say, political, and often quite self-congratulatory. So you've got a film which celebrates the birth of cinema.
True. Yeah.
Told by one of the, you know, most revered directors of his time, and maybe that was an influence, because it is a film that celebrates at its heart cinema, right?
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that, yeah. It's quite interesting. This was the first year I actually watched the Oscars, and right. It's quite clear that that is the case with a lot of films. Yeah, pick and choose for the awards especially, yeah.
I mean, maybe less so in 2011, but it did strike me as, yeah, let's pat ourselves on the back. It's a film by Martin Scorsese about the joy of cinema, therefore it's the best film. But it didn't win, and I should have researched this, because I don't know what did win in 2011. I'll Google it and let everybody know before the end. But I thought that was really, really interesting. And I should actually add a third thing, which I'd forgotten, which was that it was originally presented in 3D.
Yeah, I think I saw that somewhere. When I was looking at the posters, I think, and I was like, I wonder if we saw it in 3D. We must have, right?
We must have done. Do you have a view on 3D movies?
It kind of depends on how the 3D works. If it's just, let's chuck 3D on it at the end of the day, it doesn't really sell well for me. But if they've thought about it in production and they've got ideas for depths in certain shots and things like that, like location shots, absolutely it works for me. Hugo, I don't remember what it was like in 3D. It easily could have been that with all the clockworks and things. But to be honest with you, looking at it, it doesn't strike me as a movie that you'd go, this is 3D, let's put it as 3D. So it does look a bit like a little gimmick that they've tacked on. I don't remember, but you know what I mean.
Well, I don't remember watching it in 3D, and then obviously I sort of did my very minimal research on the movie before we watched it. But I tell you, I did as I was watching the movie think, okay, I can see that this would have been a 3D movie, the clockwork. There's one particular scene where they are in a wardrobe, they open a box, they drop the box,
yeah,
and then all the paper flies around the room in a way that it wouldn't happen in reality. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's clearly made for 3D.
That's the kind of 3D that I don't enjoy. Yeah.
A bit obvious. What about the look of the film? What did you make of the way that the film looked?
I absolutely loved it, that part of it. I think there was something that really stood out to me through the whole film, and I was keeping an eye out for it, and I don't know if I ended up looking into it a bit too much. Which I think might be an issue, but probably not. I noticed this time around that there's a lot of yellow and blue hues.
Uh-huh,
like
yeah.
It's color. It's either been color graded. Well, it's probably color graded and set designed and costume designed so that it was yellow and blue mixed together. And there's a lot of scenes where it was just blue and a lot of scenes where it was just yellow.
Right.
I was quite interested in looking to see what sort of colors it did at what times, because. But then I think I read into it too much. One thing that I did notice, and I don't know if I'm reading into it too much, but I don't think I am. There's a scene that's very blue, and I think it shows at that point Hugo's. I think it might be his indecision of what he wants to do with Chloe Grace Moretz's character, whose name escapes me, Isabel. And what it is the indecision of Hugo to either do something with Isabel or go with Isabel, and then her hand comes into shot as if to say, take my hand. And in that exact shot where it comes up, it's yellow. It's got like a gold hue to it, and that's kind of like, come with me to the warmth and the happiness and the joy of everything. Mm-hmm. And that's the bit I'm not entirely sure I'm reading into, but then the rest of it made me read into it too much.
But as always, I think you provide an insight that I didn't see. But now you mention it, I do think one thing that I did think about, and we're probably on the same page, I think, is I thought it was a movie of hot and cold. So scenes are either or warm and cold, right? The scenes are either warm or they're cold. And I didn't notice that as a colour, but I did definitely notice that there would be transitions in the movie where it was warm, golden, and then cold. I also noticed, and I don't have a theory about this, it could be a 3D device, but I also noticed there was always dust floating around. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that, actually, no.
There was always just this film of dust. Also, I'm talking about, because this is probably the first one that we've done where I really am doing it from memory, in the sense that I hadn't watched Hugo for 15 years, and I probably only watched it once or twice, so my memory of it was pretty limited. I had also forgotten that it had Christopher Lee in it.
Yeah, me too. And I was like, what a shame that we've lost Christopher Lee. He's such a great actor. I mean, he's got such a small role in this, but he sells it so unbelievably well.
Absolutely.
That it's just convincing.
Absolutely. I thought exactly that. I just thought, here is a guy who can act. What a good actor.
Every time he came on screen, I had a little smile on my face because I was like, this is going to be good now.
Again, you know, the acting by everybody, I thought, was pretty top-notch, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that's a really obvious thing to say, but yeah, really, really good acting all the way through. Ben Kingsley in particular was great.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of classically trained actors in this film, which I think really sells it, and it works quite well. And I always say that quite a lot, but for this one in particular, absolutely.
I was going to ask you what you think the movie is about.
When I was making my notes about it, it was a question of, what am I going to discuss about this movie? Because the beginning of it is very much a boy trying to figure out how to rebuild an automaton. And you find out he's trying to get a message from his dad. And then it just suddenly skips to almost like a different film.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you're learning about Georges Méliès. And it's all about him sort of overcoming the loss of his creativity and the loss of his film industry and the effect that that all had. And I mean, easily they could have gone into the downsides of the war a bit more as a story for this, but the fact that this could be because of the book, and I have not read the book, to make the story about a boy who comes across a machine, when the film is probably mostly about somebody who helped pioneer film, it's quite an interesting take to do it from that angle, because it could have been completely different. Did that answer the question?
I think it did answer the question. I thought, for what it's worth, that the film was about fixing things.
Right, yeah.
And that's the simple heart of the film. So the automaton needs to be fixed. Hugo's grief needs to be fixed. The rebuilding of Georges Méliès needs to be fixed. You know, he is something that needs to be repaired. Even down to the station inspector's creaky leg. Is a thing. It's just about fixing things. It's just about the simple joy of fixing things. And even Georges Méliès, who then becomes the toy maker, is just repairing toys. So at its heart, I think it's a film about fixing things, which I thought was lovely.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting. Yeah, I see that now. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that's it. No, I'm joking.
No, I've got nothing to add, because it's like, It's such an interesting take that I didn't notice, and it's so true. Because, like, I said last week about how it's forged my way for film, but yeah, that's an aspect that I didn't even consider. Yeah, the more you know.
I wouldn't call it a great insight. The thing that I also really enjoyed doing after I watched the movie was reading about the life of Georges Méliès. And although there's a fiction of in the movie, broadly the aspects of Méliès's life that they tell are true. He was a magician. He did pioneer movies. He did destroy most of his movies. There are of the 500 he made, there are probably about 200 left. I thought that was really, really interesting interweaving of fiction and non-fiction. I think there are probably parallels between the way in which the movie is made, very colourful, very bright, with the way that Georges Méliès coloured his movies as well. Maybe that's the blue and yellow thing coming back again.
That's true, because there were a lot of, in that sort of footage that he had filmed, there was a lot of colour. I mean, it was quite simple for the time, but there was a lot of colour in there that sort of suggests the same sort of thing, yeah.
And I guess one thing, I mean, this is in the context of you and I and also doing this podcast, but it was also about a father and a son. And you know, that gave me very nice, warm memories. And Howard Shore did the music.
Oh, wait, hang on. I was meant to check because I never saw it in the credits, but I was, yeah. Uh-huh. It's interesting, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Howard Shore did the music, which is interesting. I didn't know that when I watched the movie. I didn't find anything particularly obtrusive in the music. I wouldn't have known that it was Howard Shore, and probably wouldn't have even registered the soundtrack. I don't know if you felt differently about the soundtrack, but it didn't really register with me.
Yeah, it's ironic in a way, because the problem that I had with last week's film, where I expected it to be Howard Shore, is actually the nice thing that I had that I'd discovered in this movie, was that it was a bit repetitive, but it was such a nice sort of melody and really fit not only the time, but the setting and the period, and it made it sort of, it worked for me. I quite enjoyed it, and I thought if I was just doing something and needed some background music, I would probably listen to that album, which is something that I've only noticed upon the rewatch. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Interestingly, we've said this now a couple of podcasts in a row, and we talk about soundtracks and they have a repetitive nature to them. That might be true. That thematically, they may have certain themes that repeat, and like they're like, I guess if you think about it, they're like little audio cues to what's happening on screen. But see, we're three podcasts in, and already that's the kind of insight that we give people, that the music is a cue to what's happening on screen. You don't get that you don't get that level of insight anywhere else.
Yeah, and all the colour theory on each shot and everything.
Colour theory, yep. Also, Ben Kingsley's really, really bad black beard.
Do you know what? It's one of those things where I just sort of like, oh, they're trying to make him look younger, so I overlook it. But you can really tell the difference.
So that they coloured it in with a Sharpie.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, did you notice the actress in it? She died recently and her name escapes me, which is a shame. She was
Helen
married.
McCrory, yeah, I was going to bring that up.
She was married to Damien Lewis and I have always admired her as an actress.
Yeah, me too.
And it was there was a moving thing about the movie, which is about loss and fixing things, that two members of the cast who I really, really like are no longer with us. And
there's a third one, actually.
Wow, who's the third?
Because Richard Griffiths has also passed away.
Of course.
Yeah, I thought it was quite sad.
Wow. No, that is sad, particularly in the context of that film. Yeah, I Richard Griffiths passed me by. But I it was a little moment where I saw Helen McCrory and I thought, oh, what a shame. She's so good.
There's a lot of, I know I've kind of mentioned it already, but there's a lot of classically trained actors in this one. And that's quite a nice thing to see, because you don't often see it that much these days. And you know, when you've got a cast like that, it's going to be good.
Do you think there would be actors queuing up to be in the next Scorsese movie?
Possibly. I don't know if that's one of one of those ones where he's such a big name that he would just pick people out. They wouldn't have to audition rather than people waiting for it. Yeah.
I can see that there'd be a process of audition for Hugo, possibly Isabella, but I can't imagine Christopher Lee auditioning.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And Ben Kingsley and Helen McCrory, I think they were probably chosen. What did you make of the actor who played Hugo?
This was quite interesting for me too, because it must have been starting out pretty early for Hugo. And it kind of showed in a way, like it wasn't as convincing as I remembered it being, or it could have been. Towards the end, absolutely, I was sold. It's the scene where they're showing all the movies again and introducing Georges Méliès, and he tears up, and it's like, okay, I'm convinced now, but it's the end of the movie. Whereas for some of it, it's just a bit, wooden's not the right word, but emotionless, I think. In his face, I think there could have been a lot more emotion from him, but he was only young. He started out, so
I think there is an issue generally with child actors where you're, unless they're amazing, you're never ever quite sure. Chloe Grace Moretz is a child actor, or was a child actor, but you know, in Kick-Ass, for example, which is not a film that we're going to talk about, but she was great in that, and she was 8 or 9 years old, so she was really, really good in that. And I thought Sacha Baron Cohen was good. I like him anyway, but I thought he was good.
He's one of those, like, the concern that we had for Jack Black in King Kong, where I was a bit like,
Marmite.
Yeah, is that going to work? And this time around, I absolutely thought it did. It added a nice level of humour that I think broke up the emotion quite well. I found myself really enjoying those scenes this time, and almost rooting for him in a way. Especially the scene towards the end again, where he has to decide, does he want to let Lysette, Emily Mortimer's character, see him, like, take this child away? And I think that was the bit that I went, okay, this is fine. I'm happy with this casting choice. Not that it's up to me, but you know what I mean.
There are a couple of little moments that he has. One is very touching, one is very funny. The touching one is when he references that he was once an orphan, which is just a nice bit of depth. And the other one was right at the end, and I think Lisette says something about smiling, and he said, yes, I've mastered 3 of those now, yeah. Which really made me laugh.
And now, a word from this week's sponsor. Are you tired of your clock constantly running slow or stopping altogether? Look no further. Introducing Automaton Clock Fixers, your one-stop solution for all your clock repair needs. At Automaton Clock Fixers, we understand the importance of timekeeping. Our team of skilled technicians specializes in repairing and restoring all types of automaton clocks, ensuring they function flawlessly once again. With years of experience and a passion for precision, our experts meticulously diagnose and repair any mechanical issues your clock may have. From intricate gear mechanisms to delicate pendulums, we handle it all with utmost care. Our commitment to quality extends beyond just fixing your clock. We also offer a comprehensive cleaning and maintenance service to keep your timepiece running smoothly for years to come. At Automaton Clock Fixers, we pride ourselves on our attention to detail and dedication to customer satisfaction. We understand that your clock holds sentimental value, and we treat each repair as if it were our own.
I thought my clock was beyond repair, but Automaton Clock Fixers worked their magic and brought it back to life. I couldn't be happier.
The professionalism and expertise of the team at Automaton Clock Fixers is unmatched. They fixed my clock in no time, and it's been running perfectly ever since. Don't let your precious clock gather dust any longer. Contact Automaton Clock Fixers today and experience the difference of our exceptional clock repair services. Automaton Clock Fixers, restoring the heartbeat of time.
Moving on to a new feature of our podcast, we are about to have Sam's out-of-pocket take. Now, do you want to talk us through what that is?
Yeah, so I've decided to come up with the out-of-pocket take based on the last 2 podcasts where I've said something that's either an established theory that someone's come up with or a theory that I've come up with. So for episode 1, The Phantom Menace, it was that the Tusken Raiders are time travellers.
True.
Sent back to kill Anakin.
True.
And the one for King Kong was either that Carl Denham, Jack Black's character, was a self-insert for Peter Jackson. And I think you kind of came up with one saying that Andy Serkis was technically Popeye. So it's kind of that. And I don't know if we want to add an element of guess whether I've made it up or it's come from something. Although for this week, it's quite obvious.
Okay,
this week is fairly obvious.
So Sam's out-of-pocket take, is it Sam's own or is it an established movie theory? Let's hear what it is.
The actor that played the automaton later went on to obviously grow up and play Ultron in Avengers Age of Ultron. He's doing quite well for himself. Had an eye change colour, but yeah, there you go.
Oh, I don't know. That's got to be true because you couldn't make that up. But if you think you know better, if you think you know whether that's true or false, get in touch. The Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. Sam's out-of-pocket take.
Is the automaton Ultron?
It's got to be true. It's got to be true. I love all your out-of-pocket takes. I have shared the Tusken Raiders of Time Traveler out-of-pocket take with two or three people, all of whom say, oh, that's just true. So
yeah, absolutely. So, it has to be. It makes sense.
Is there anything else we want to say about Hugo that we feel we should have said? You must have more notes.
Yeah, some of the CGI, because I know we like to discuss that a bit. And it's not one of those films that has an overabundance of CGI. You wouldn't really expect it. But where it is featured, it works well enough. I think there was a shot... Oh, that's right. The shot that I really didn't like, which I don't know if it is technically CGI, is when Isabel is stuck in the crowd and she's on the ground, and it cuts to this amazingly well done shot of quite clearly some extras walking on glass and the camera's underneath so you can see their feet, you can see from her perspective. And I was like, what a great shot. You know it's not real, but you get the sort of idea behind it. And then it does this weird sort of half transition where you see Isabel's face and it's just like, what are they trying to do here? That looks terrible. So it goes from wow to wow. It didn't really work for me, but I think the rest of the CGI works well enough for the film that it is. Like, you're not expecting big budget things to happen in a film like this, and it's not CGI at all. But on the back of that, the automaton, since I was a kid, has always creeped me out in the scenes where he's just blankly staring straight down the barrel of the lens.
Yeah, but I think that has to be deliberate, the creeping out automaton, because it creeped me out too.
Yeah, the last shot of the film where it's just him staring down the camera, I'm expecting him to go, well, that's the movie, or just like wink at the camera or something like that.
I was expecting a blink or a wink or something, and I think that, again, I think that probably was what we were supposed to be expecting, and it didn't happen. I don't have much more to say about the movie. I do have one more question for you, but did you notice a couple of what I would call like homage to classic cinema? There's one in particular that comes to my mind, which is the train crashing out of the train station. That's a really classic movie or photographic image. And there are probably a couple of other ones as well. There was all the stuff on the clock, which reminded me of, I think it's either Harold Lloyd or Buster Keaton from an old sort of movie from the 1920s. But that one in particular, the train one, that struck me. You know, in a movie that is an homage to photography, that's a really iconic image and obviously deliberate. So you've told me in the past that this is quite a personal movie for you, and in particular was an influence on you studying film, or there's something about that. So just for the benefit of the listener and for me, just remind me what that is.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those films where looking back and watching it, it might have been part of an inspiration of the reason why I went to uni to study film. And I remember it was my first day at university, and they sort of gave a bit of a rundown of everything, like a freshers thing. And they showed on screen a bunch of things that we'd be looking at or what we'd be doing. And one of them was the shot of the rocket flying into the eye of the man in the moon. And I thought, hang on, I've seen that before. And it was one of those moments where I was like, am I in the right place? Have I sort of seen Hugo and it's become my destiny to study this sort of thing? And I think looking back on it and rewatching it with those kind of eyes, I can really see, yeah, I might have been inspired to do this because that's the kind of thing that I enjoy and it's the thing I want to be doing. But it was just sort of a bit of an awakening to realise, yeah, this is what it is. Because I know you mentioned at the beginning the Wallace and Gromit and I wanted to get into animation. So I think there's been things along the way in my life that have sort of brought me here anyway. And so I do have a bit of an emotional connection with it for that, I would say, yeah.
That's a nice place to end. So the 2011 Oscar winner, I have asked the Google, any guesses what it might be?
For 2011, I'm not entirely sure. So it could be anything. Is it something that I've seen?
No, I don't. We didn't watch it together. I did watch it when it came out, but we didn't watch it together. It is The King's Speech.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, I can see that. That makes sense, yeah. I don't know if I'd put it above Hugo, but okay. I've not seen it, to be fair.
This then is a good place to do our Benefit of Hindsight rewatch score. I gave it a 6, you gave it an 8, an aggregate score of 7. That was our memory score. Your rewatch score, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first this time, I think. Or maybe I shouldn't, because maybe I need your conclusion, but we'll see. I'll say mine first, and then maybe I'll change it. That's a little tease, okay. But I don't know. So, just overall, I really enjoyed watching the film again. I've discovered it's got quite an interesting plot, a lot of subplots as well that I really enjoyed this time around, with the sort of relationship building and the friendships and things like that. I appreciate the classically trained actors, and I enjoyed everyone in every scene, especially Christopher Lee. He should have had more screen time, I think. And I think, as I've mentioned, it will always be a very special film to me. That being said, I think because of my memory of it and thinking, oh, this could be related to my past and I'm really looking forward to watching it, I gave it an 8. And I'm not entirely sure I should have given it an 8, because I think that made me think, be more excited and more expectant of it when I'd revisited it. So I, unfortunately, this time around, I have dropped it to just a 7. And I was thinking maybe a 7.5. But I don't know how entirely I want to work in 0.5s. So I think I'm going to settle.
No, we don't do 0.5s. We don't do half scores here. So 7.
Yeah, 7 for me now. So wow. It's only gone down a little bit. It's not that I don't love it anymore. It's just I think I put it on too high a pedestal, let's say. But what do you think? Because maybe mine will change.
No, it's too late now. You've registered a 7.
Okay. Locked in.
I gave it a 6. And I should tell you that I gave it a 6 because I couldn't really remember it. So therefore, I probably should have given it a 5. But I did remember enjoying it when we watched it. So I gave it a 6, benefit of the doubt. I think it's great. I think it's a really good film. I don't think it's a kid's film. And I think that's probably why it didn't land when it landed in the cinema, because it felt like a kid's film and it probably isn't. So I think it's great. The thing I need to decide, I gave King Kong a 9, so I need to decide whether or not I think it's better than, what is it better than King Kong?
Oh, surely no, you don't think nothing, so.
Nothing's better than King Kong, although there must be a 10 out there somewhere. I'm going to give it a 9.
Wow.
And
for Hugo?
Yeah. What's wrong with it?
Wow, okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's just more a case of I've looked through it with what's that? Red colour? That's not right. Rose coloured glasses. Yeah. And I've gone, this is amazing. This brought me up. It was my childhood. And then I've watched it and gone, is it though? Because as you said, I didn't really see it as a kid's film this time. It's one of those films that I would watch as an adult that not a lot of people would sit down and watch with me because it's so grown up and mature. And I think I saw it different when I was thinking of my memory score, but it hasn't gone down much.
No, I'm interested from you that it's gone down. So you gave it 8 down to a 7. I gave it 6 up to a 9. So that is a total rewatch score of 16. Therefore, it's an 8 out of 10 for Hugo. That seems fair.
Yeah, I'm quite happy that you've gone to a 9 as well.
I nearly gave it a 10 because within the context of what it does, it doesn't do anything wrong. And the only reason I didn't give it a 10 is because I think there might be other films that we're going to watch that might actually be better. So if I go in strong on episode 3, I've always got to then be pulling back from that, haven't I? But
that's true, yeah.
Would you like to give Hugo a one-word review?
Yeah, what word do I want to give it? I'm going to go with heartfelt.
I would go with touching.
Okay, not too dissimilar then, yeah.
Next movie then. Next movie on the Benefit of Hindsight podcast. What will be episode 4? Episode 3? This is episode 3. So episode 4. We've done two biggies. Two big films. Big shouty movies. We did a nice gentle movie. Let's go back to something that's somewhere a little bit in between.
Something a little bit exciting, yeah.
Well, you say that. We'll be looking at the 2008 Steven Spielberg classic, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Classic is an interesting word to describe that, yeah.
I think we can say a little bit about this, but not much, okay? I think we can do this really quickly. This was the movie, of all the movies that I've ever taken you to the cinema to watch, that I was most excited for you to see. Because Indiana Jones was my childhood. That's me, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. So there's you. You are 14 years old when the movie comes out. I'm properly excited. And I was ashamed.
Yeah, it's it's definitely one of the movies of all time.
It is definitely, of all the movies that have ever been made, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is one of them. So you can, I don't know how much conversation we need to have about this. I'm going to give you my score straight away. Do you want to hear my score?
Yeah. Indiana? Good idea.
Okay, so I'm basing this on giving The Phantom Menace 2, which was meh. Okay, so my one-word review of Phantom Menace is meh. My memory score of the 2008 Steven Spielberg classic, Indiana Jones, etc., is one. I'm going to give it a one.
Okay, interesting. I say that every time, but interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it a one.
So, as you've just sort of said, as a brief thing from me, obviously, I'd seen that you were excited for this. We'd watched the original three. I've got fond memories of that. Uh-huh. To be honest, it's probably a lot different for me as a kid having seen it, but I've got a lot of thoughts as an adult. So for me, I've been a bit more generous than you this time around, and I've given it a 3 out of 10.
Wow. Okay, so we have an aggregate memory score of this film of just 2. We were so excited. I bought a hat. I bought an actual Indiana Jones hat.
I remember that.
Hat.
I almost bought one for the 5th movie, but that's another story.
which unfortunately won't feature in this podcast because we didn't watch it together because you were an adult at that point, which says something about the longevity of Harrison Ford, I guess. So yeah, that just brings us to the socials. We have had some traction on the email, so thank you to those people that have been emailing us, thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter, TBOH, you know this better than I, TBO Hindsight at, I can't do Twitter. You do that. You're younger than me.
I
do
try.
Twitter.
At TBO Hindsight Pod on Twitter, yeah. Or X, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Well, I am looking forward, though, to going away and watching Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Are you?
Again, because I get... Well, I am, because I gave it a one. My memory of it is it's potentially my most disappointing moment in cinema history. And... 15 years have passed, more than that now, isn't it? 16 years have passed since that movie came out. We're older.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We're older, we're wiser, and Shia LaBeouf isn't acting anymore, so it might actually be...
interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah, oh, dear. Okay, well, as always, thanks for listening. I've enjoyed talking about Hugo with you. Good movie, yeah. Benefit Final Sight score of
it.
8. So that makes it, that might be our top movie so far. We should probably put these scores on Twitter or something.
There's something in the works. Yeah, it's on its way.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. It's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Bye.
Bye. Catch you later.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see what the movie's true. Did they change history?